right? Where the deals go to die. So I was like, that is not the case. So I just think people were looking at it as face value. But when I talked to the broker and started looking at and dove into this deal, I realized like, well, man, I've got multiple exit strategies, you know, because there's three buildings. I'm like, I could sell one building off and keep two. Like, you know, there's so many different ways to go with student housing. You know, I started looking in all those different aspects. I'm like, man, this, I said, there really isn't a lose-lose. And so even with all these naysayers and stuff, just went ahead and took the plunge. And yeah, it's worked out.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Colby Bowers is a full-time real estate investor and co-founder of Veteran Pride Investment Group. He's been investing in real estate since 2001 and has acquired over 600 rental units and expanded his company into three markets. As a wounded warrior, he has a passion for giving back to his community by helping homeless and struggling veterans and supporting first responders. Colby, welcome to the show.
Damn, I'm glad to be here, bud. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, man, the pleasure's all mine. Where are you based out of?
I currently live in Steamboat Springs, Colorado.
That's fantastic, man. That
no, is fantastic. It's horrible. It's horrible, yes.
Well, I hear it's what? We're recording this on October 12th, and you said you guys are getting 5 inches of snow today?
That's what they're calling for, yes.
My goodness, yeah. Man. That's fantastic. Well, hats off to you. It's probably 90 here in the South today. And we won't be seeing snow probably all year long. So, you know, good for you for sticking it out in weather like that. That's awesome. The same questions I ask everybody who comes on this show, Colby, can you quickly tell us, where did you start? Where are you now? And how did you get there?
Yeah. So I started, like you mentioned, I started back in 2001 with single family homes, just like everyone else, right? Because we didn't have really a lot of the internet back then, social media. There wasn't a lot of, you know, the information for commercial real estate wasn't as readily available as it is today. So I bought my first single family home, which I actually lived in, my primary residence, while I was still active duty military, and caught the bug. And obviously 2001, you know, we were attacked and you know, so the Enduring Freedom, Iraqi Freedom, all that kicked off for the last 20 plus years. And I was deploying quite a bit. And saving money. So instead of going out and buying new vehicles, I started, hey, I want to buy property. So I bought other single family homes and then realized that, holy crap, that's a lot of work. I was trying to manage them while working, while deploying, because my first set of bad advice I ever received was, is you need to manage them yourself because you're losing 10%. Well, yes, I'm losing maybe 10% of gross profit, but I'm losing about 90% of my freedom at that point. So I was like, third party property management, way to go. No regrets. And then, you know, fast forward to when I retired, I knew I wanted to not work the corporate world, even though I tried that for about a year or so when I got out. I wanted to get into commercial real estate, but I just like, how do I do this? And, you know, just started really educating myself. And so, like I said, I retired back in 2016. And, you know, I think my tipping point was, is I bit the bullet. And said, you know what, I'm going to, you know, I was listening to all these podcasts and stuff. And I was just like, you know what, I'm going to go to one of these boot camps or these conferences. And I went and the light bulb went off. I was like, oh, wow, I can do this. I don't have to have, you know, a lot of money or high net worth or an uncle that has all that. You know, it's helpful. Don't get me wrong. I wish I did. But, you know, I realized it is, you know, I can put in the work. It's not rocket science. You know, it's a process. And being in the military, coming from that military background, we're all about processes. It just, it kind of really, really sunk or came together. And I bought into a coaching program, mentorship. And man, I just, I retired in 16. I didn't take the plunge until August of 2018. February of 2019 is when I invested in my first multifamily. And so since February of 2019 to today, we just closed on our fourth property a couple months back, and I'm sitting around 642 doors. I've sold off all my multifamily except for one.
Single family or multifamily?
I'm sorry?
Single family.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I sold off all my single family. Yes. Okay. Oh, yeah. No, I'm keeping all my multifamily.
Got it.
Sold off all my single family homes. I strictly own all multifamily. And the first deal I ever did solo, I'm actually going first full circle on. And it was a condo complex, 15 units, did a bunch of upgrades to it. Wasn't the best. We can talk about that a little bit later as part of some mistakes and lessons learned, if you will. But we are in a current, we've separated them out. We're selling them off individually as single family homes under contract right now for 9, just closed on one last week, got one closing tomorrow, and then 7 more over the coming weeks. And then we got 5 on the market right now to finish, 6 to close them out. So really excited about that. And we'll gross about $1 million.
That's awesome.
And bought that property in December of 2019. So less than 2 years.
Wow. That's fantastic. That's a lot of moving pieces there. And I guess while we're on the topic, you know, because the likelihood I remember to come back to this in 15 minutes is low. So the condo complex, you bought 16 units. Were they all vacant? What was the story on them? I mean,
it was 15 units, and it was built in 2007, or it's when they broke ground. Developer went out of business. Somebody went in and bought it, rented it out as an apartment building, just as individual units. Great. They went out of business, lost on it. And then another investor I bought it from picked it up, didn't do anything with it. And then so I bought it, and we turned around and, you know, I saw because the way it was set up, they were in, you know, they were set up to be sold off individually, but never were.
Right.
So from the beginning, I was always looking at that as my secondary plan. My primary is to hold on to it long term. I want to buy and hold on to things 20 plus years. But when we hit the $1 million equity mark on it, it was a no-brainer to go ahead and try to sell it and basically reutilize that capital into bigger and in other deals. So those
were all individually, they were already individually deeded. I mean, so when you bought it, you had 15.
No, so they had not quite got to that part. So they all had their own 911. They had, you know, they were set up. All we did is in the last year, we went and it cost quite a bit of money, but we had to go through, got the architectural plans, did a big horizontal regime change is what they call it. And basically, which is separated, deeded them out. And then we created an HOA or a POA, as we're property owner association in this state, and this is in Arkansas. And you got all that in place. And instead of when we marketed it, we marketed it as a whole package and as individual. And, you know, the whole package is, you know, we were going to sell it for a little bit less than what we knew we could get it for market. Sure. But if we didn't hit our numbers, we're just like, whatever, this is what we're doing. You give us this offer, or we're just going to sell them off individually. And we had a lot of lowball offers, of course, you know, and folks coming in, and, you know, we had some get close, but we're just like, no, you know, here's our number. And so we once we got the first one under contract, we're like, sorry guys, last chance, here's the number, you hit it, or we're pulling it off the market as a package. Nobody came back in. We had one group hit it, but it was their first time buying a property. So no track record, and didn't feel confident closing with them, you know, and actually making it to closing because they didn't have a sponsor or anything. So we just said, you know, thank you, no thank you. And then, you know, we're selling them off individually, and really excited about that.
There's a lot of questions I have in that process. Like, why do you think no one has done that up to this point? I mean, it sounds like an asset that's just kind of floundered for 13 or 14 years. Why has no one gone to the efforts that you have just to turn this into what you've done with it?
You know, I've asked myself that same question, because when I was looking at this, I had a lot of naysayers, you know, because I took it now as an apartment building, 15 units, it was not the best deal, right? Yeah, I mean, the numbers were good. Right. But my plan was to hold on to it long term, and I knew where I could get it to, and it would work for a long term hold. But I also looked at it as a backup. I'm like, man, the market's going up. It's 1 mile away from the University of Arkansas. It's a 1 block from the free bus line. It's on a core trail that for biking and walking, it's on a creek. You know, it's all these pluses, but yet I think is people weren't. Oh, and here's the other thing. I found this deal on LoopNet.
Wow.
Right. Where the deals go to die. So I was like, that is not the case. So I just think people were looking at it as face value. But when I talked to the broker and started looking at it and dove into this deal, I realized, like, what, man, I've got multiple exit strategies. you know, because there's three buildings. I'm like, I could sell one building off and keep two. Like, you know, there's so many different ways to go with student housing. You know, I started looking in all those different aspects. I'm like, man, this, I said, there really isn't a lose-lose. And so even with all these naysayers and stuff, just went ahead and took the plunge. And yeah, it's worked out.
Sounds like it. I mean, you're making, you know, a gross profit of roughly $60,000 a unit, it sounds like. So yep. There's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that at all. And, you know, I think it's interesting, you know, that obviously your goal is to buy and hold, but of course, looking at it through it with a different lens and saying, okay, maybe there's some other things we can do with this to turn a profit out of this.
Yep.
I've got some questions for you about the offer that you turned down, right? They met your number. What are some things that buyer could have done to have had you maybe have more confidence in them as a buyer?
If they would have brought in a partner that had a resume, you know, that had done it before, that could, you know, give us the confidence that they could get to closing, you know, and that's what a lot of people, you know, I think don't really, and even I got into this, is when you're making an offer, whether you're buying or selling, something to remember as you're, say, if go, and I've seen this all the time, I've won out a number of deals and I didn't have the best offer, right? And it goes back to is it's not always about the money, you know, it's about the package, you know, can you get to closing? You know, just because, and the reason being is, like, say, you know, they hit my number, but then, you know, it's 60 to 90 days. I pull this off market. I've got all this holding cost and, you know, they don't qualify for a loan. Whereas if I could have taken maybe $100,000 less with somebody else that has that nice proven track record, we go to close. Well, guess what? Yeah, I may still come out ahead because I don't have 90 days worth of holding costs, headaches, you know, whatever the case may be. Starting all over again, you know, time lost. So, you know, keeping that in mind is when you're going forward, and it's always important, I think, is to partner, especially starting out, is partner with somebody with some experience with that track record. Like I said, we passed on the deal recently on, and we didn't have the best offer. They came back, they didn't accept, but they countered and they're like, listen, you guys didn't have close to the best offer, but we had a track record. We were already in this market. You know, they knew us, you know, because I came with my team, you know, from my more, everybody on my team was known by the sellers and the broker representing the sellers. And they're just like, wow, these guys are great. Let's go back and try to work with these. They count. We just couldn't come to an agreement because yes, number is still important when you're buying, but you know, you got to look at is what is their pain point? And having that track record, can you close or not?
Tell me, how did you guys fund this condo opportunity? And then want to ask that same question as it pertains to your multifamily holdings.
Yeah. So this one we did, we have private money investor. So basically a hard money loan through a private investor. And that's how we went to a bank. So it's a non-recourse loan that we received. And got a private private investor, and we were able to close. You know, that was good, and it was also bad. Bad because, you know, we were so, this is my, and so this deal was my first deal that my partner and I did, like, by ourselves. Mm. So we were KP sponsor, we qualified for the loan, everything. But it was our first deal that we did solo.
Right.
And went from a limited partner and JV and a couple of smaller deals to this deal. And looking back, I'm glad I did it, because I also go back as I made a lot of mistakes and I made them early and I'm learning from them. Yes, I'm going to make money on this deal, but there's a lot of stress that has gone in with this deal. If I going back, I would go back and be like, you know what? I want to bring on a JV partner with that money lender. And, you know, I think we could probably, instead of selling it, we may have held on to this property. Honestly, we might've been able to increase the value even more. So it was just that inexperience of wanting to take down a deal, which was good. It was a great confidence booster, but I think we left money on the table, and, you know, I think I have more gray hairs and stuff now than I did.
Yeah. But that's the name of the game, right? I don't know how many of us have done deals. We're like, gosh, I left a lot of money on the table there, but there's no trade-off for experience, and you got to do what you got to do. And, you know, good for you. You came out still making money. So the win-win. Talk to me about your multifamily holdings. I know you said this is your first deal you've taken down as the key principal with you and your partner. How have you taken down your other assets?
And we do a combination. So I look at it as I'm an opportunistic investor, and I look at the way I fund my deals. You know, there's different tools. So, you know, I've syndicated a few deals, utilize that tool, joint venture deals. Again, a hard money investor. So, you know, I've done, you know, the gamut. And, you know, I don't want to say anyone is better than another. It's, you know, each deal we look at, we run through all the processes. Okay, which tool is going to be the best for this deal? You know, I will say is because I am a long-term investor, I'm not a huge fan of syndications. Mm. They're a necessary tool, but, you know, typically you're going to be locked into your business plan and your investors are expecting you to sell within a certain time frame.
Right.
And so, you know, that's not my goal. I don't want to sell. I want to hold. I want cash flow. That's what I'm in this for, the cash flow. So that's where I like joint venture deals. But, you know, a $20 million purchase price, you know, I haven't built up my friends, if you will, that I can JV with five or six folks that we can cover the down payment on a $20 million deal. So, you know, we're going to syndicate those deals. So again, it's just, I've got a whole mix in the portfolio.
What's it been like? I mean, again, you know, with a shorter track record, what's it been like finding JV partners that can kind of help write those bigger checks?
You know, it's actually been easier than I thought. And I think a lot of that comes by is because, you know, it's, we have a process in place. You know, I've aligned myself with some great partners, you know, basically general partners on a deal. So it's, and having a track record, you know, coming recommended, you know, I mentor folks. I've just getting out there, being educated, being helpful and honest. I think that's the biggest thing, you know, and the biggest takeaway we were inbred in the military is integrity, you know, so that's doing what's right, even when somebody's not looking. And, you know, integrity in the business world is lacking in a lot of instances. So, you know, a lot of, you know, I've turned down investors.
Sure.
I'm like, hey, you know, that have come to me like, hey, I've got, you know, $100,000. This is my first deal. I want to do it. I'm like, no, you know, I'll, you know, if you want to invest, I'm not going to take your $100,000. I'm going to start you at a smaller amount because we haven't worked well together, or we haven't worked before together before. So you don't know me. I don't know you. And I don't want to take your only $100,000. Cause if I screw this up, I've screwed this up for life.
Right.
Right. You're never going to invest with me again. And I think that's come out in a positive way, you know, and then we don't sugarcoat, you know, I just had an investor meeting last week and they're like, hey, we're going to hit our target. And we are on this, we ventured into my first two mobile home parks and we're probably going to miss our target for the first year. The supply chain, it's just, you know, hasn't panned out. Even though we thought we were very conservative, it's not. But I'm like, listen, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. As of today, we're going to miss it. But guess what? We know we're going to make it up and we'll catch you up in year two. You know, and it's just being on and going, listen. And they appreciate that. They're like, okay, I can deal with that. So now I'm going to expect is I'm not going to give me a nice check for Christmas and not be able, you know, so I'm going to I'll fund Christmas a different way, you know? So even though they weren't unhappy, obviously they're a little disappointed. I'm disappointed as well, but you know, they appreciate the honesty and the straightforwardness.
And I think that's anybody in business, you know, and I think keeping that honesty and straightforwardness with people, like you should be taking money from people that are aware of what they're getting into. Right.
Right.
Like this is business, and I've personally invested in multiple businesses myself, and not all of them have launched out, and it's my own money in the deal. And you go, well, you know, things didn't work out in the first 12 months like we thought they would. That's just, you know, part of what we do. And I think that gets overlooked. So good for you, or does get sugarcoated, at least on the front end with a lot of projections and things where it's like, no, there's real risk we are taking here. So, yeah. You know, just making that known up front, I think is really cool. So good for doing that. I love that. Let's shift gears a little bit and maybe talk a little bit about your nonprofit. Maybe talk a little bit about a recent, I don't know, small hill you just climbed. Tell us about some of those things and why it is that you do what you do.
Absolutely. No, thank you. You know, I got into real estate and kind of tell you the whole story on how we went from I went from the military to real estate to starting and running a nonprofit. And they're kind of in line with each other. You know, being in the military, you definitely don't join the military for the paycheck. You know, so it's, you know, you leave out of the military, it's, you know, you're definitely not a high net worth individual. I mean, there are some people, great investors and stuff, but they didn't get it off their military paycheck for the most part. But, you know, it's that service before self type deal. I really enjoyed being part of something bigger than myself. And that's what I miss a lot about the military. And so one of the things I wanted to do in the real estate side, and I do with Veteran Pride Investment Group, my company, is, you know, I donate 20% of my profits to veteran and first responder communities. We also, our goal is 10%, and we're sitting right around 4 or 5% right now, but also is trying within our portfolio is setting aside up to 10% of our units for HUD-VASH. And HUD-VASH is basically, it's Section 8, but it's specifically for veterans. And it's for veterans that are potentially are at risk of becoming homeless. So there's a lot of parameters, but basically it pays out the same as Section 8, same requirements and stuff. It's just a little bit more segmented. And then the participants, the veterans themselves, have to actually jump through some hoops to qualify. So that's kind of, you know, being that part of something bigger than oneself, really want to still give back to the community, because I am a wounded warrior. I was injured a couple times in Iraq and Afghanistan, roadside bomb, different explosions. You know, it doesn't, you know, there's more healthy ways to grow up through your 20s and 30s than in a war zone. But, you know, all that being said, is the money that from my profits wasn't doing enough fast enough and growing quick enough for what I wanted. So my wife and I, we started a nonprofit. We call it the Paper Crane Foundation, because, you know, the start of a global pandemic isn't challenging enough for life. So we're like, you know what, we're going to launch this at the beginning of a pandemic. So we did. So January of 2019, we went live. We're a 503C, went through all those hoops. And we were supposed to do it last year, but with COVID, everything got pushed off. Our first expedition, if you will, for the Paper Crane was to go to Mount Everest Base Camp. We had to switch gears due to requirements and restrictions, logistics of getting into Nepal. So instead, this year, we flew out to Tanzania, and myself and three other wounded warriors, a local first responder here from Steamboat, firefighter, paramedic, and then an active duty guy, flew to Tanzania and hiked Mount Kilimanjaro. Left the 26th of August and got back on the 8th or 9th of September. So literally over a month ago, we got back, still recovering, and it's to raise awareness. So what we do is, we're not a destination nonprofit. We're actually a nonprofit, raise money to raise awareness for traumatic brain injury, which most of us suffer from. And also to raise awareness that, listen, there's other veterans and first responders, folks out there that have had concussions that have become couch locked, and whether due to balance issues, memory issues, or what have you, we want to show that, guess what, you can overcome those. I walked with a cane. I couldn't carry my son up and down stairs. I really didn't bond with my son the first 2 years of his life because I couldn't hold him for fear of falling. They were going to get me a service dog, and was able to find the right help and stuff to, you know, I summited Mount Kilimanjaro a month ago. Yeah. And so we are moving forward, as this kicked off a 5 to 7 year research study trying to increase our, make earlier diagnosis of traumatic brain injury more available. Right now, it's very subjective. You go in, follow my finger, you know, and type deal, making an MRI or something, but it's very subjective. So we're partnering with a few companies that have some devices. And what we want to do is basically get those devices out to urgent cares, emergency rooms, to collect data, because what we're seeing, and a lot of that out there, is like, it took them 6 years to diagnose my traumatic brain injury. And that seems to be, you know, that four to six years. And that's a lot of time that could have been rehabilitating and healing. And that's lost time with my son that I'm not going to get back. So, you know, that's Paper Crane. Yes, we're starting off with veterans and first responders, but we're going to open it up to, you know, we want to do research on for kids, you know, because there's over 8 million concussions in the U.S. alone each year.
Wow. Wow, that's really cool. And that's a big overarching why.
Yes.
To what it is that you do. So that's super, super cool.
And being in real estate allowed me to take 3 weeks off, you know, working from home to go and do that. You know, I didn't have to take vacation time. I didn't have to coordinate my schedule with a boss. I mean, other than my wife, but she was fully on board. So,
right. Understood that. That's fantastic. Colby, I love what you're doing. I love how you're doing it. You know, and just the get it done attitude, and especially overcoming, you know, traumatic brain injuries, and then also turning that on I'm not going to use the phrase and say turning it on its head, but literally to go out and, you know, help others as well that suffered, you know, as you have. So that's fantastic. Thanks for doing that. Is there anything else here before we jump into the final four questions that you'd love to share with our audience?
And not that I can think of. I mean, I could sit here and talk real estate all day. I mean, but we only have a little bit of time left. So now I'll let you take it over.
All right. Sounds great. If I gave you 20 grand to invest in real estate and you had no previous real estate investing experience, what would you do with it and why?
You know, depending on what you're looking for. That's a really good question. I think you touched on this a little bit earlier. If it's only $20,000, but, you know, do you want to kind of, do you want to be a hands-on learner or learn from the sidelines? You know, so if you want to be a hands-on learner and you really want to get into this business, you know, I'd say, hey, maybe, you know, let's look at a small joint venture deal to where you can be, have an active role and be a part of it, but yet, you know, still have the support and stuff of experienced operators such as myself. Or another one is maybe you want to get into a bigger deal, maybe to help build up a resume, then look at a syndication type deal.
Right. Right. I love that. If you could help our listeners avoid just one mistake in real estate, what would it be and how would you avoid it?
Don't listen to the naysayers. You're going to have them. I mean, and that's early on, like I mentioned, is I didn't turn it over to third party property management. I tried doing it myself. That was a huge mistake. But now it's like, I don't want the calls at midnight to, you know, that's right, property management. I call them and go, give me a status update. How are things going? Oh, you had a leaky toilet. Was it fixed? Yes or no? That's all I care about. You know, was the tenant taken care of? So, you know, I would say that's the biggest one, especially when you're starting out. Don't listen to friends and family. They're probably the biggest naysayers.
Generally, unfortunately, I believe you're right. Well, I've asked this question already. We've kind of hit on it. Third question is, when it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing to make the world a better place? And I would assume that's going to be your nonprofit.
Yes, sir. I mean, I think that's, you know, our goal is we know with this research and stuff that we're going to actually be able to touch the lives of people worldwide. That's research. So it's not just for one segment. It's going to have big impacts once we get it to where we want it to go.
Fantastic. I love that. Colby, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, what is the best way to do that?
The best way right now, because not that I'm anti-social media, but I'm an older guy and tech isn't my strength. I'm working on that. Just email me. That's the best way. So colby.bowers@veteranpride.org. Shoot me an email. You know, I have a website, www.veteranpride.org. There's a way to submit, you know, a sheet and stuff if you have some questions. But if you really want to reach out and you want to get a hold of me and I'm very responsive, is shoot me that email.
Awesome. Colby, thank you so much for your time today. I do appreciate it.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks for having me. This has been fun.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.